Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And today, we're going to dive back into the local sports front. We got some great local sports news coming up. Talked about this late on the show yesterday. The USU Eastern softball team making the announcement of a new coach, Ryan Smith, who is going to lead the Lady Eagles in the upcoming season. In fact, they have fall ball going down this weekend. We'll give you the recap on that story, and next week we're going to catch up with Coach Smith. Today, as far as guests go, we are going to be joined by Carbon High School football coach Josh Huntsman. The Dinos gearing up for their third contest of the season this Friday. They will take on the Duchesne Eagles at home and on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak. We'll talk to Coach Huntsman next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Plus, we'll go around the national sports scene. In fact, let's start with some football right now. A lot of receiver talk. Yesterday, we talked about Odell Beckham Jr. And before I get into today's news on wideouts, I do want to talk about Beckham Jr. here for just a moment. There are literally people out there that do not believe this guy is an elite wide receiver in the NFL. Why? How could you possibly believe that Beckham is not an elite receiver in the league? I've had multiple people tell me that the idea of Beckham Jr. is built around one catch on a national televised game. I have multiple people tell me that, and that's actually a popular opinion on social media. A lot of people on Twitter who don't like Odell Beckham cling to that. And I get it. If you don't like the guy, I get it. A little cocky, he's young, he's flashy, plays for the Giants, not necessarily a likable team. But at the end of the day, this guy is worth every penny that the Giants gave him. $16 million a year, easily worth that. Statistics go a long way, right? He's 25 years old. He's coming off an injury last season in which in four games he had 302 yards. But we go back to his previous 3 years. 1,442 yards receiving, 1,467 yards receiving, 1,511 yards receiving, and as far as receiving touchdowns go, he has 38 in 4 years, and last year I only played four games. This guy's elite. There's no question about it. This guy is elite, and he's worth every penny that he was given in that deal yesterday. I can't believe the talk that he doesn't deserve what he got. There are certain receivers. Mike Evans getting his deal from Tampa Bay at around, what was it, like $80 million? That's pretty similar to what Brandon Cooks got in Los Angeles, 1,000-yard receiver. Julio Jones. Look, you have Antonio Brown, who is the best receiver in football. Best receiver in football, hands down. Guy can do it all. Guy can be used as an extension of the running game if you need him to. Then you have Odell Beckham. Then you have Julio Jones. Yeah, in that order. Those are the three best receivers in the NFL. That man is worth every penny that the Giants gave him yesterday. Now, speaking of wide receivers, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. Alshon Jeffery is expected to miss at least the first two games of the season, but the team will activate him to the 53-man roster this weekend with optimism that he could be back by week three. Coach Doug Peterson remained noncommittal in his press conference earlier today as far as the status for next week's season opener against the Atlanta Falcons. Can you believe it's coming up next Thursday? We have NFL football. According to ESPN, it is in Jeffries' best interest to miss the first two games to maintain some steady gains in rehab from shoulder surgery, which he had in February. He's been around practice in shorts and a t-shirt doing light drills. Could be back by week three. That's great news for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, on the flip side, Dez Bryant a receiver, still without any work, said on Twitter last night that he will likely wait until later in the season to sign with the team. He was released by the Cowboys, met with the Browns last week, left his visit without signing a contract. Remember, Baltimore offered him a deal, but it was a multi-year deal. This past offseason, he turned it down. Only 29 years old, three-time Pro Bowl selection. You know all the ins and outs about Dez Bryant. He is going to wait. This tells me two things, okay? Either A, he's saying that because nobody in the league wants him, all right? Or B, he's going to play this out and sign with a championship contender because at some point in time this year, someone who is competing will have an injury and Dez will be an option. He may be the top option. In fact, I talked about the Patriots yesterday. Their depth chart is down to three wide receivers that I see as viable options for a 53-man roster right now with Julian Edelman suspended. They have three. I think it's actually very reasonable that Bill Belichick actually starts the season with three or four wide receivers. There's a misconception out there that you have to have five, six, seven wide receivers on a roster. No, you don't. He could start with three. Julian Edelman comes back, that's four, and then you clear up a roster spot later on in the season for someone like Jeremy Maclin or Dez Bryant. So Dez saying that he's going to wait means one of two things. Nobody wants him, or he's waiting to play for a contender, and right now, I'm telling you, there is no contender that will touch Dez this late in August. It has to be not an act of desperation, but it has to be a move in which a team has a glaring need at wideout or an injury creates a roster spot. That's how Dez Bryant lands back in the NFL at some point in time this year. Let's take a look at Major League Baseball. We're down to that 30-game mark, and again, these races are tightening up as far as the divisions go. We went over the divisions yesterday. Let's take a look at the scoreboard front to back tonight because we have some very meaningful baseball that will be played. 5 o'clock tonight, Marlins, Red Sox. Red Sox, 90 wins. That's a pretty good baseball team. Again, they got a 7-game lead right now over the Yankees for the top spot in the AL East. 5:05 tonight, we get the Blue Jays and the Orioles. The White Sox will travel to meet the Yankees. Again, the Yankees 7 back of the Red Sox in the win column. 6 back, I believe, in the loss column. 5:05 tonight, Max Scherzer, probably going to be the NL Cy Young. He'll take on Aaron Nola and the Philadelphia Phillies. That's a big game for Philly. Washington, I've put an X through them. They're done, even with Max Scherzer on the mound and playing the way he has this year. He's got a 2-1 ERA. The Nationals, not good enough to make the playoffs in the National League. 5:10 tonight, we get the Twins and the Indians. The Brewers will take on the Cincinnati Reds. Milwaukee trying to cling to one of those wild card spots in the National League. Not going to catch the Cubbies, but they have an opportunity to grab a wild card spot. That's an important game. 5:35 tonight, the Braves play host to the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays have actually played pretty good baseball over the last little while now at 70-61. The Braves, 73-57, trying to hold off the Phillies in a divisional race. 6:05, we get the Mets and the Cubs. 6:10, the A's and the Astros. Love this series. Charlie Morton is going to be on the mound tonight for the Astros. 13-3 on the season with a 3.05 ERA. Edwin Jackson will take the ball for Oakland. As it sits right now, the Astros hold a 2-game lead over the A's. This is quality baseball. It's at 6:10 tonight. I highly recommend this game. 6:15, we get the Tigers and the Royals. Also, we get the Pirates and the Cardinals. Cardinals right now, that NL West, or the NL Wild Card race, I should say, as they are competing right now with the Brewers and trying to hold off the Rockies and the Dodgers. Speaking of the Rockies and Dodgers, NL West, Rockies right now second place at 71-60, take on the Anaheim Angels tonight. Also, we get the Seattle Mariners and the San Diego Padres at 8:10. The Diamondbacks will take on the Giants. Clay Buchholz on the mound for Arizona. The Giants will roll out Madison Bumgarner. Right now, the Diamondbacks 2 games up on the Dodgers, 1 game up on the Rockies, and the Dodgers will actually be in action at 6:05 tonight as they take on the Texas Rangers. So a lot of interesting and important baseball games to be played. And it's crunch time as far as Major League Baseball goes. This is the fun time of the season. That's a quick look at what's happening to the national sports front. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We'll give you the local sports recap. And when we return, we'll be joined by Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dinos. It is a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Auto Farm Studios right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're back right after this. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Ryan Smith has been named the new head coach of the USU Eastern softball team. It was officially announced yesterday by athletic director Chelsea Warburton. Smith comes to Price after spending the last 5 years coaching at Hurricane High School, including 2 years as a head coach. Smith also coached 5 years at the competitive club level for the Southern Thunder. Originally from the Bear Lake area in Idaho, Smith was a three-sport athlete at Bear Lake High School, playing softball, basketball, and baseball. He holds a bachelor's degree in psychology from Argosy University and a master's degree in social work from Cal State Northridge. Coach Smith and his wife Melanie have 5 children, including one who was a softball player at Snow College. He'll take over a program in its third year that returns half a dozen starters and all-conference honorees from last season. Last year, the Eagles finished the year 25-27 overall and 20-20 in Scenic West Athletic Conference play. Smith and the Eagles will kick off their fall ball schedule this Friday and Saturday with games in Tooele. We move over to high school cross country, and this past Thursday, the Carbon Dinos opened up the 2018 campaign as they traveled to the Badger Invitational, which took place in Wayne County. The Dinos had several key placers in the Invitational. They were led by junior James Briner, who finished 5th overall with a final time of 17 minutes and 45 seconds. Ryan Page, also a junior at Carbon, finished in 7th place, while Chad Page, also a junior, finished in 9th. As a team, Carbon finished in 2nd with 32 points, easily topping 3rd place Panguitch, who finished with 58. Monticello took home the top score with 16. On the girls' side of the meet, the Lady Dinos were led by senior Reagan Hansen, who finished in 2nd with a time of 19:51. Carbon also received a 17th place finish from senior Megan Swayze. In the final overall team scores, Carbon was 5th as they registered 84 points. They just fall short of topping Wayne, who was in 4th at 81. The top score went to Panguitch at 22. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll continue to bring you the results for both Carbon and Emory High School as the cross-country season continues this week. We move over to high school soccer, and we stick with Carbon High. And today, the Lady Dinos will look to improve to 3-0 in Region 14 play as they travel on the road to meet Mazer Prep. Carbon so far this year has played excellent in region action. After topping Union 5-1 last week off a Grace Broadbear hat trick, Carbon responded by topping Providence Hall 1-0. Following today's game, Carbon will return home on Thursday to take on American Leadership Academy. That contest will also be a part of the Region 14 schedule. Now we stick with high school soccer, but we move over to Emory High, and the Lady Spartans will begin Region 15 action as they take on North Sam Pete at home today at 4 p.m. The Lady Spartans had 5 games in the non-league portion of the schedule. They finished 4-1, picking up wins over Cypress, Payson, Beaver, and Gunnison Valley. Over the last 3 games, Emory defeated Payson, Beaver, and Gunnison Valley by a combined score of 16-0. Start time for today's game is set for 4 p.m. The second game of the region schedule will take place this Thursday as Emory plays host to Grand at 4 p.m. And we end by moving over to high school football. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll be joined by Carbon Dino coach Josh Huntsman. We'll recap the team's most recent setback, a 38-7 loss at the hands of the Payson Lions, and we'll also preview this Friday's home tilt as Carbon will welcome in the Duchesne Eagles. Again, that'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m. on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games, you follow the team, you wear the colors with pride, and you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
Time for the Coach's Corner. Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. We have more high school football week 3 coming up already this weekend. And of course, right here on KOAL, we'll bring you live coverage of the Emory Spartan football squad. They will travel on the road to meet the Payson Lions. I'll join Vinny Rondinelli on the road for that contest. And then on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, Sonny Buscarini and Travis Anderson will bring you the play-by-play call as Carbon plays host to Duchesne. And that's the contest we're going to talk about right now. Joining us over the phone to recap this past weekend's loss to Payson and what lies ahead for Carbon this Friday, we have Coach Josh Huntsman on the phone. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate you having me.
Definitely, Coach. Let's go back and talk a little bit about this past Friday's game. You and I had a conversation post-game on air about the way things kind of transpired. 38-7 loss to Payson. In this game, you guys had much more success in the second half as far as stopping the rushing attack for Payson. The first half, it seemed like there were some adjustment issues. Coach, when you go back and you look at the grand scheme of this game, what stood out to you?
You know, we made some mistakes early in the ball game that we couldn't recover from. You know, there was opportunities for us to do some different things, and we didn't get them done. And so we just made too many mistakes.
There were opportunities, and to be honest, I was really impressed with the way the defense played in that first quarter, Coach. They really were faced with a short field, and yet, really, you guys had converted two red zone stops back-to-back, a missed field goal, and then a deflection in the end zone, which should have been a turnover on downs. Instead, a roughing the passer penalty was called. That prolonged the drive for Payson, and from that point on, they kind of took control. But really, from a defensive standpoint, I thought they did some great things, all things considered.
Yeah, you know, I definitely thought they played a much better game defensively. You know, the points that were put up on the board weren't an indication of how well our defense played. If you go back and if you look at the film, you know, the entire third quarter we only gave up 3 points, and that was still with their starting varsity guys. And so, you know, we were pretty pleased with what we did defensively. And again, you know, it's an adjustment on the system. And so, you know, kids had just barely seen that defense, you know, that week. So we started that defense on Monday. And so between Monday and Friday, putting an entire defense in, I thought our kids did pretty well.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Coach. I thought that there were definitely some good things. Secondary play, you guys absolutely improved. You told me post-game the goal was to keep Payson under 100 yards passing. You guys did that. Bowers is a talented kid that can throw on the run, yet you limited him to 72 yards. And even more impressive than that, he completed, I believe, less than 50% of his passes.
Yeah, we were hoping to just get in the way. You know, that was our big thing. We wanted our defensive back to stick with the man, run with the man, and you know, if they beat us man to man, so be it. We were okay with that, but we felt like we had enough talent on the field that we could run with them and we could stick with them throughout the night.
Offensively, I guess the offensive opportunities weren't really there when you look at the number of plays that you guys managed to run, Coach. What did Payson throw at you guys defensively that made it difficult to run the football?
But, you know, they were cutting their front. They were definitely going low on the front, which is perfectly fine, perfectly legal. Our kids didn't make the adjustment to it. They didn't go down to make the blocks that they needed to make. And, you know, with that 4-4 that they ran, all they did was, you know, they'd cut the front and then they'd run their linebackers into the gaps. And you know, they did a good job. They were well prepared for what we were going to do.
Still, once again, Riker Larson leads the team in rushing. I know that his opportunities could probably grow as the season continues based on what we've seen for the first couple of weeks. Outside of Riker, if we look at Riddick and we talk about Jalen and we talk about Colin, how did you assess their ability to see the holes and take advantage of what was given to them by their offensive line?
You know, Colin had some pretty good runs. He had a little bit of ball security issue the other night, but, you know, for the most part, Colin ran hard. He did what he needed to do. He got those tough yards on the inside, you know, kept him honest, kept him stepping down into the box. And so, you know, we were pleased with him. We need to do a better job getting Riddick and Jalen the ball in space. You know, those are two of our speed guys that can really help us out if we can get them the ball on the outside edge.
One of the big positives for the offense, Coach, was you guys did take advantage of a short field, a turnover on the punt. That's something that opportunity doesn't arise often. It hasn't. I think that was the first turnover, if I'm not mistaken, this season, but you guys managed to put points on the board off of the short field. That's an opportunity that I know as the season goes deeper and deeper, and once we get into region play, that's a great learning experience, and the kids took care of business once you guys forced the turnover.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, anytime you get a turnover, you got to take advantage of that turnover. You got to either get a quick strike or a drive that's going to be sustained and punch one in the end zone. And I think they did a good job with that last night. The other night. It was a good drive to see. You know, right before half, going into halftime. You know, we could have been down. We could have hung our heads, but no, our kids stepped up. They made a nice drive, got the ball in the end zone, and we had 7 points on the board going into halftime.
Are you happy with where the offense is from a red zone standpoint, Coach?
You know, not currently. We need to do a better job. We need to take the opportunities that are given to us. When we get when we get the ball, we need to try to punch it in every single time. And, you know, there's been multiple opportunities for us to do that, and we have not. But, you know, red zone efficiency-wise, I think we're okay. We just need to continue to progress, continue to grow, and continue to do a better job.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dino football team. Coach, if we jump ahead to this Friday, another non-league tilt, this time against Duchesne. This is a very good football team. They have been a very good football team for a very long time. I tell people all the time, don't let the 3A, 2A, 1A tag fool you. There's some quality programs, be it football, basketball, baseball, volleyball, it doesn't matter. There's quality programs from 3A all the way down to 1A, and Duchesne fits that bill.
Yeah, there definitely is, and Duchesne definitely does fit that bill, you know. They've done a great job with their program over the years, and the nice thing about them is they have a system in place. They don't really have to do a whole lot of different things. All they do is plug the next kid in, and when they plug the next kid in, they're usually pretty good at it.
This contest will be a little bit different for you guys. You and I did talk about McCade Bradley being ejected, Coach, in the contest against Payson. Because of that, he's not allowed to play on Friday. How much of a factor does that play going into this game?
You know, it's tough. We have to train a new guy to play at center. You know, Tristan Stemtakis has you know, been playing that spot for us. But, you know, the snaps this week or, you know, yesterday hadn't been all that great. And so we moved Braden Barker over to center. We're going to have a look at Braden Barker this week, you know, throughout the rest of the week. Again, Tristan Stemtakis throughout the rest of the week. And we'll see which one of those guys is going to earn that spot at center. And, you know, the other one will play at the tackle position. But, you know, we've got to solidify, you know, one of those guys as our center for the week.
We talk about McCade offensively, defensively. Doesn't play a huge factor for you guys, does it?
You know, he does a pretty good job for us at defensive tackle, but we do roll a lot of defensive tackles in, and McCade is one of those guys on the rotation, so it does throw our rotation off a little bit.
Well, let's talk about what we may see offensively from Duchesne this weekend. They got a lot of weapons. They also got a quarterback that was fairly efficient with the football this past week against North Summit. Cason Grant threw for 3 touchdowns and I believe 200 and something yards, if I'm not mistaken. So they can beat you with the ball through the air, but they also have plenty of options on the ground, Coach. They'll keep you guessing in this running back by committee approach.
Yeah, you know, they definitely will. As I've been watching film this week, you know, their first drive, it was all run. Their second drive, it was all pass. And so, you know, we're going to have to be prepared for what they do. They've actually moved their quarterback away from the center. They're running their wing tee out of shotgun now, and so, you know, you've got to be prepared for guys crossing in front of the quarterback, crossing behind the quarterback, doing a bunch of different things there. And you know, their offensive line play is going to be key for their running game. So if we can attach to those pulling guards, we should be able to run right to the play. So we've got to do a good job up front and keep their offensive linemen guessing.
If we go beyond the North Summit game for Duchesne, Coach, and we go back to their first contest against American Leadership, ALA exposed Duchesne with big plays down the field. You know, quarterback play was huge in that game for ALA. They had one receiver go over the 100-yard mark. They had a couple float around that 50-yard mark. Are they suspect when it comes to the secondary for big plays?
Yeah, you've got to stretch the field with them. You know, occasionally their defensive backs will come up and press. Occasionally they'll drop off. Occasionally they'll drop to a zone. And so you've got to hit those mid to deep range balls, and you've got to be efficient when you do it. So, I mean, if you're going to throw it, you definitely have to know that you're going to catch it.
Coach, what's the attitude been like since that game on Friday for the kids? Is there still a lot of optimism around this team?
Yeah, there definitely is. You know, we've got that workmanlike attitude. We came in, we watched film on Saturday, we went over what we needed to go over. Then we started preparing for Duchesne. And so these kids, they're focused on what they need to do. You know, we know that the first 4 games, they're tune-up for our region, and we do have a very tough region. And so we're just trying to put ourselves in a position to get prepared for that. And you know, I like the games that we've played. I like the games that we're going to play. And so we're just trying to prepare for region.
You're a football guy. I know you basically eat, drink, and sleep football, Coach, and you just mentioned a tough region. As far as the 3A North goes, Morgan is 1-1. Grantsville is 2-0. Outside of that, Carbon, Emory, Judge, and Union all winless. What's your early assessment of this region?
It's still up in the air. I think, you know, Morgan's always Morgan's going to be the front runner with that because of experience. I think Grantsville has done a great job. You know, they're tough. And, you know, every year you play Grantsville, they're going to be tough. Union's kind of an outlier. You expect to see a lot more from you know, their quarterback. He's been in their system for a while, and you know, things just haven't gotten rolling for them yet. But I think that could be a group that could be really tough. You know, I talked with Coach Cordova yesterday, you know, about game-wise, and he's got 31 kids on his roster. Well, he's got 34, and I think only 30 of them can play. And so he's struggling to get numbers up. And so, you know, everyone's just trying to do the best they can to get kids to come out to play so that they can actually get football games in this year.
Coach, last question before I let you go. As far as the injury front goes, it looked as if you guys got out of Friday's game pretty clear. Is that right?
Yeah, we definitely did. You know, there's still sore legs, sore bodies, you know, things like that. But you know, we didn't have any major injuries, so our kids are pretty healthy. We expect everyone on the varsity roster to be available for that game.
Coach, it's always fun to talk with you. Best of luck against Duchesne, and I know we'll talk again real soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, that's Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dino football team talking about this Friday's contest. The Dinos will go square off with the Duchesne Eagles. That game will be live on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, and also a home contest, the final home non-region game of the season for Carbon. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the KOAL newsroom at Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, live from the Auto Farm Studios, and I talk fantasy football. I don't talk a lot of fantasy sports here on the show. I think the majority of people are playing fantasy football. I like it. I like fantasy baseball, I think, probably the best. I play a lot of fantasy baseball. You got to be dedicated to fantasy baseball, though. That thing goes on forever. We're down to the final, I believe, 4 weeks of the fantasy baseball season, but it started back in March. You got to really be dedicated for it. Fantasy football, it's once a week. I actually participated in my fantasy draft last night. That's the key. You can't get in too many drafts. You can lose focus quick if you get into too many. Set a deadline, roll with it. Here's the interesting question for those who have not played fantasy football, and if you have one of the top two picks in the draft, who should go number one? Who do you take number one this year? Now, if I look at the fantasy rankings, typically it's Le'Veon Bell or it's Todd Gurley. And I don't think you can go wrong with either of the two. But here's some fantasy advice for you if it comes down to that. Todd Gurley is the best player in the league, in my opinion. I think he's the most dynamic. I think he's the most versatile. And at this stage, I believe he will be the most durable. Could be wrong. I know he had the knee injury once already in college at Georgia. But I believe that Todd Gurley will be the best football player in the league once again. I thought he should have been MVP last year. I'm all in on Todd Gurley. I don't care what type of scoring it is. Traditional scoring, PPR. He's great in PPR because Jared Goff knows how to use him in the flats. Touchdown scoring. Great chance he leads the league in touchdowns. Doesn't matter. To me, it's Todd Gurley. If you're not sold on Todd Gurley, and I think that I can relate this particular opinion on Le'Veon Bell to fantasy football into the NFL in general, and this is one reason to consider Le'Veon Bell when you start drafting or if you're about to draft in your fantasy football leagues. This guy's on a one-year contract. He's done in Pittsburgh at the end of the year. I don't believe he wears the Steelers uniform next season. The Steelers are going to run Le'Veon Bell into the ground. They are going to use him at every possible avenue. This guy may lead the league in carries. There's a great chance he'll lead the league in touches. And that's the other thing in fantasy sports. You can't score if you're not getting opportunity. And that's something that we overlook in fantasy sports all the time. Stay away from the name. Look at opportunity. That's the best advice I can give anyone when you're playing fantasy football, fantasy baseball, whatever it is. Opportunity. Baseball, we're talking about hitters. Give me guys that get at-bats. You can't score unless you have the ball in your hands in fantasy football, unless you're playing with defensive players. Go with the guys that get the opportunities. And while I believe that Todd Gurley is going to be the number one player in football this year, and he's only 24 years old, at the same time, I don't know that anyone out there will get more opportunity this season than Le'Veon Bell. I think this is it for Mike Tomlin. This season is one of those years where it has to be magical for Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger is not getting any younger. I think Antonio Brown is the best wide receiver in football, but guess what? He's 30 years old. What does his window look like? He's a speedster, right? He's elusive. You can use this guy as an extension of the run game if you want to. I love Antonio Brown, best wide receiver in the NFL. The window in Pittsburgh is closing, and Mike Tomlin is fortunate that he has one more opportunity to right the wrongs of last year in Pittsburgh with the way things went down in that playoff game against Jacksonville. The decision-making was horrible. And with this amount of offensive talent, he's got one more season to right the wrongs. So if you're going back and forth between Gurley and Bell, keep that in mind. Le'Veon Bell is going to lead the league in opportunities this season. When you consider touches out of the backfield and targets through the air, he's going to be number one. I'll tell you who else is going to be right there with him. Saquon Barkley. Barkley's an interesting character to me. I see so much ability in this guy. Probably a tier two running back as far as fantasy football goes this season. But when you go back and you look at the success of running backs, Ezekiel Elliott was a stud his rookie season. Alvin Kamara, obviously. Dalvin Cook would have had a great year. I like Dalvin Cook a lot. Liked him when he was in college. Kareem Hunt was fantastic. Leonard Fournette, great fantasy running back. You go back, what, 3 or 4 years ago, Todd Gurley? Once he finally stepped foot on the field, had a couple of dynamic games, and you got to see exactly what Gurley had to offer. So rookie running backs have had a lot of success over the last 3 to 4 years. Barkley is going to be used early and often. And I can also apply Odell Beckham's contract to Saquon Barkley's value in football, especially fantasy, because Barkley is going to free up Odell Beckham quite often this year. It's been a while since the Giants have had someone on the backfield that they could rely on through the air and on the ground, and I think Barkley is going to get plenty of touches. So when I look at the three running backs to get the most opportunity this year, to me, it's Gurley. Bell is going to be number one in touches because, again, the Steelers are going to use him with complete disregard. They're going to go crazy with Le'Veon Bell. And I'll say Saquon Barkley. Now, the Giants, if things get bad early for the Giants, they may actually pull back a little bit on him. But here's something else that's interesting. When you look at your fantasy 1 through 10, you have two players from the Giants in your top 10. Barkley's got to be top 10. To me, I would take him as the third best running back as far as fantasy football goes this season because, again, I'm looking at opportunity. But Odell Beckham, got to be the second wide receiver behind Antonio Brown. I went over Beckham's stats at the beginning of the show. This guy's gone over 1,400 yards in every full season that he has played. That's three, but that's a fair enough sample size when looking at fantasy sports. Don't overthink it. It's all about statistics. And I think statistically speaking, you can grab a three-year sample, and that's a logical start point when looking at fantasy sports, be it baseball, basketball, football. But I had a draft last night, and I noticed that the NFL is a copycat league, and I'm starting to feel that fantasy sports is in a similar situation. The first time a quarterback comes off the board, you start threatening a little bit. You start looking, you start worrying a little bit. Be it a keeper league or be it a freshly draft league, you start to think a little bit. Stick to the plan, grab your running backs, grab the players that get the most opportunity. That's how you win fantasy sports. Like I said, we don't talk a lot of fantasy here on Drive Time Sports. But we're at that time of the year where fantasy football is very, very big. If I had to put together a top 15, I wouldn't have a single quarterback in my top 15. Not a single quarterback. It would be nothing but running backs, and I would put three wide receivers in my top 15. I would put Antonio Brown. He's probably in my top five. I would put Odell Beckham. I would put DeAndre Hopkins. And speaking of DeAndre Hopkins, one other wide receiver that I think it's a perfect match with him is Will Fuller. This guy was good last year. Will Fuller has the potential to be a top 15, top 20 wideout in the NFL this season. And I think you could probably grab him a little bit later on. If he can remain healthy, this guy's the real deal. He's a speedster. And I'm not sure where he's falling in most drafts, but when you look at Will Fuller's production last year with Deshaun Watson, boy, there was chemistry between those two. Now, when Deshaun Watson went down, things changed a little bit. But Fuller last season was pretty good. Started 10 games. You take a look at his overall numbers from last year. He had close to 500 yards when playing with Deshaun Watson. And again, he only played 10 games last year. He was a little banged up. Watson's season was cut a little bit short as well, don't forget, because of the ACL injury. But he was a touchdown machine. And a lot of that has to do with Will Fuller's speed and the attention that DeAndre Hopkins is getting. I'm not saying I would put him in my top 20 by any means, but I think he could be a top 15 wide receiver this year. And you can kind of tag him along with DeAndre Hopkins. Now, typically, once a year, we do a fantasy football show, and I know we'll have that a little bit later on in the week. This is kind of just a primer, I guess, maybe because I did one last night, and so I was in the mood to talk about it today. We'll break down each position. A couple of players I would recommend you stay away from. Jordan Howard in Chicago, stay away from him. Top 20 pick, no way. Christian McCaffrey in a PPR league, I like. Don't like him otherwise. Kenyon Drake in Miami. It's another player that I'm not really high on. I think that with the amount of horses in the stable for Miami, Drake's going to lose a lot of goal line carries, and in touchdown heavy leagues, that's going to affect you, should affect you greatly. And the one player that I am completely not sold on this season, it's Adam Thielen. I know he's got a much more capable quarterback this season. Not high on this guy. I think we saw the peak of his fantasy value last season. And again, when playing fantasy sports, you have to remember it is all about statistics. And it is a different look for Minnesota this season. I get that. Dalvin Cook is back. He's going to eat some of the touches, some of the targets. I mean, last year, as far as targets go, Thielen had 142. That was an increase of exactly 50 from the year before. But at the same time, his numbers dropped drastically towards the end of the season. If you go game by game for Adam Thielen, I believe he scored one touchdown over the final five games of last season. Only had four altogether in 2017, but I believe it was just one over the last five games. I think his fantasy ceiling, his fantasy production, it's peaked. A couple of players I would stay away from. Now, look, using Adam Thielen, if you need a wide receiver deep, not a huge Cowboy guy, but Michael Gallup, they don't have much more. Cowboys don't have much more. And again, we're talking about percentages and possible targets. Who else does Dallas have? Not much. On the outside, Allen Hurns, he's been an okay fantasy wideout. If he's been your third or fourth fantasy wideout, you've been okay. Terrence Williams, no, not buying it. Dez Bryant's gone. Tavon Austin, if you look at the depth chart, Tavon Austin is going to be used as a running back in Dallas. You may see him occasionally line up at a slot set. Tavon Austin's an extension of the run game. The Rams proved that last year. Michael Gallup, he's going to become the number one option for Dak Prescott. And I think that's the design. 22 years old, third round pick. I like him. I liked him out of Colorado State. I like Michael Gallup. Maybe that's a receiver you could grab a little bit deeper. Like I said, we'll talk more fantasy football a little bit later on in the week. By the way, if you've had a fantasy draft a week or 2 weeks ago, your commissioner stinks and he shouldn't be commissioner anymore. He shouldn't have a fantasy draft until after or at least the week of the final preseason game. Too many injuries. Your commissioner stinks if you had a fantasy draft 2 weeks ago. It's exciting. It's fun. I get it. Can't have a fantasy draft week one of the preseason. Doesn't work that way. Got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll put the final touches on this Tuesday edition of the show. And again, we'll talk more fantasy football a little bit later on in the week. Live from the Auto Farm Studios here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. Final segment here on this Tuesday edition of the show. You know, the Utah Utes are making their return to KOAL this Thursday. And Travis, this is going to be a quick segment because we only got a couple of minutes left. Pac-12 South. You and I have talked about this over the last month, month and a half. Utah's chances of winning the Pac-12 South. What do you think?
I would put that at 40%.
That high, huh?
I am high on Utah this year. I have questions about USC, and there's no other team in the Pac-12 South that I worry about.
Let me throw some over-unders at you in the Pac-12 South.
Okay.
That's how we're going to close out the show today. Let's start with Arizona. I love Khalil Tate. Incredible last year. He was a freshman, don't forget. His legs, he can beat you with them. Mm-hmm. His arm, he can beat you with them. Kevin Sumlin, to me, great head coach. Love it in Arizona. Over under 8 wins for the Wildcats in the first year under Kevin Sumlin. Give me their non-conference games.
Okay.
BYU, Houston, and Southern Utah. Hashtag go T-Birds. That's their non-conference game.
BYU's at home, right, in Arizona?
Yep.
8.5. I will say under because I think they could get to 8, but I'm going to lean more towards 7.
I think they get to 8.
I say 8.
I think they get to 8.
So 8-4?
8-4 sounds about fair.
8-4 for me for Arizona. They will beat BYU. They will beat the crap out of BYU.
You think so?
Yeah.
Arizona State, first year under Herm Edwards.
This is going to be a disaster of a train wreck. Anything you can think of with Arizona State.
Over under 5 wins for Arizona State. Their non-conference, UTSA, Michigan State, and San Diego State. Over under 5 wins.
I'm going to say push. I think they get right to 5. Can I do that? Can I say push?
They got some weapons offensively. Manny Wilkins is a pretty good quarterback. They got a kid by the name of N'Keal Harry at wideout as well. Defense is going to be a mess. They have 4 returning starters this year, and I think that's where Arizona State runs into problems. I'm going to say under. I don't think they get to 5 wins. I'm going to say under.
I change under thinking about it because they're not going to beat Utah. They won't beat USC. They're not going to beat Arizona. So there's 3 losses plus Michigan State, there's 4. Yeah, they're not getting there.
Colorado, say 5.
Under.
I like Mike McIntyre. I think he's one of the best coaches in the Pac-12. I really do. I think he's that good. I've seen what he's done with this program. This program was in shambles. Steven Montez was pretty good for Colorado last season. He's athletic. Again, I'm talking about a kid that can beat you with his feet. He can beat you with his arm. He's got to be a little bit more efficient. They do have a primary running back returning. Colorado was, what, 4-0 last year?
Yeah.
I think they started off 4-0 last year, finished with just another win the rest of the way from that point on. They play 2 non-conference schedule, 2 games non-conference-wise I'd be worried about. Colorado State, Nebraska. Outside of that, they get New Hampshire. I say they go over 5 wins. I'm going to say over.
I'll say push.
UCLA.
Chip Kelly.
6 wins, over under.
I think that Chip Kelly can get those guys to 6. So I will say over.
Cincinnati at Oklahoma, Fresno State. That's their non-conference schedule.
They can win 2 or 3.
They're not beating Oklahoma.
No.
They'll beat Cincinnati. They'll beat Fresno. I really don't know what to think of UCLA this year. It's going to be a work in progress. 6 wins. I think if you get to 6 wins, I think if Chip Kelly can get to 6 wins, I think it's a very good season for
UCLA. I think
he gets
to 7. I'll say over 7.
I'll say over. I'll go the over.
I'll say over.
I think they can get there. USC, 9 wins. Over under. Non-conference games, UNLV, snooze fest, at Texas. That's a tough game. At home against Notre Dame. That's a tough game.
They got at Stanford, at Texas, back-to-back weeks coming off the UNLV. 9 wins, I will say, right at that point, 9-3 for me for USC. I'm going under because I think they're going to lose at Utah. I don't think they win at Texas. I think they lose to Stanford. And then somewhere they're going to slip up.
Think they lose to Notre Dame?
Not at this moment. If that game was at Notre Dame, yes. But seeing it's at USC, I will give the slight advantage to USC at this
USC
point.
USC wins 8 games this year.
I say 8. I think they're 8-4.
They win 8 games. I think they do lose to Notre Dame. I think they lose. I'm with you. I think they could lose to Utah. I think that the UCLA game is going to be really interesting this year.
It's at UCLA, right?
It's in Pasadena.
JT Daniels, the freshman quarterback just named. You got that going for you. Offensive line, it should be okay for USC. It's the run game. And the wide receivers that I worry about staying healthy.
Travis, they will not beat Texas and Stanford back-to-back.
No,
they will not.
Stanford's going to... Because anytime you play Stanford in the following week, you have another game that you got to play on the road against Texas. Stanford is going to beat you up physically. And we've seen USC, when they've played Stanford before, they've been beaten up the next day or next game they lose.
Yeah, I don't...
8-4.
8 wins? I can see that. Utah, 8 wins, over-under.
I will say right at 8.
Non-conference games, they're not going to lose. They get Weber State, Northern Illinois, BYU. They're not going to lose any of their non-conference games. I think Utah gets to 9 wins. And I think they get to 9 wins. I don't know if they win the Pac-12 South, but I think they get to 9 wins.
They're going to beat USC. They got the tough North. They got Washington, so I will say 8-4. Under.
I think they get to 9 wins. I think the Utes go 9-3 this year. And again, 9-3 doesn't necessarily mean that's good enough to win the Pac-12 South because it's based off conference record.
They always slip up in late November.
They always do.
They've lost the 11th week or the 11th game, I think, the past 8 years in a row.
Don't forget, though, the Utes have Washington, Arizona, and USC all at home.
That's an advantage.
All at home. That's a big advantage. Remember, the Utah Utes will come to KOAL Thursday night. They'll take on Weber State. Live coverage will begin immediately after Drive Time Sports. Out of time on this Tuesday edition of the show. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.
Serving all of Eastern Utah, this is News Talk 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. KOAL. Price.